Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And we're rolling. The curtain is up on the latest episode of American Hauntings, the podcast hosted and produced by Cody Beck and written and performed by Troy Taylor. That's me. We'll take you behind the scenes of Hollywood, the movie capital of the world. Well, you'll find palm trees, swimming pools, and more movie stars than you can shake a stick at. But Hollywood isn't always what it's cracked up to be. It's a place of shadows and sunlight, mythology and murder, and home to more cranks, nutcases, killers, and lunatics than you'll find just about anywhere else in the country. In season 5, we find ourselves on the streets of Los Angeles, the fabled city of angels, looking at the history, mysteries, spirits, scandals, and sins of Hollywood, that glamorous bit of LA that's not so much a place these days, but a state of mind. Each episode of the new season, which started with episode 70, which you'll go back and listen to if you know what's good for you, will reveal another sordid Hollywood tale of crime, corruption, murder, and of course, ghosts. And these episodes may not be suitable for all listeners, so listen at your own peril. You've been warned. So sign your name in the guest book and don't use John Smith like everyone else does. Get the room key and let's take the elevator up to the 13th floor so we can hear a new episode of American Hauntings. And action. Hollywood is nothing but a facade these days. It's not even a real town anymore. It's just another part of Los Angeles that looks a little worse for wear. And the sun-bleached hotels are much like Hollywood itself. They're aging, faded, and trying to hang on to the glamour they had in decades past, when it was movie stars and not hookers that you'd find along Hollywood Boulevard. Some of them may be seedy and a little beaten up, but they have a history. And it's a history that keeps coming back again and again, and often it returns to stories of ghosts and other assorted strangeness. And strangeness is a word that hardly begins to describe the location that we'd like to take you to in this episode. It's a place that you've seen on television and which inspired a bit of fictional horror too. It's a place that you may have heard some stories about, and yet there's little that can prepare you for the real-life tales of horror, death, murder, suicide, and spirits that haunt the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. The Cecil Hotel has a long history in the city, dating back to the 1920s. In recent years, the hotel has been renamed Stay on Main, but the old original sign remains in place, as if the owners know that no amount of rebranding will ever erase the place's sordid and bloody past. In 1924, hotel entrepreneur William Banks Hanner commissioned the construction of the Cecil Hotel. He envisioned a lavish 600-room building with stained glass windows, upscale rooms, expensive decor, and a gleaming marble lobby. Hanner hoped the rich design and spectacular amenities would attract tourists and business travelers alike. In 1927, the Cecil opened its doors, and it soon became a hotspot in downtown LA. But the good times of the Roaring Twenties didn't last for long. In October 1929, the stock market crashed, signaling the start of the Great Depression. Cities across the country were impacted by the economic collapse, including Los Angeles. While the Cecil held on to its glamorous appeal through the 1940s, the bright lights of the surrounding neighborhood dimmed. And that's a kind word for it. Thousands of the homeless moved into the area, and Main Street, where the hotel stands, became LA's Skid Row. Travelers and businessmen began looking for other safer places to stay when they came to town. In the years that followed, the hotel fell on hard times, turning into a sleazy spot that invited crime, drug use, prostitution, and violence. It was during these years that the darkest moments in the Cecil Hotel's history took place. The first of many suicides to occur at the Cecil took place in 1927, leaving behind a note in which he wrote he had spent $40,000 in the last 6 months in a vain attempt to buy happiness. Percy Ormond Cook shot himself in his room at the Cecil on January 22nd. According to the note, Cook had been a successful real estate developer in Providence, Rhode Island, but after being separated from his wife and son for several months, he decided the only way to escape his loneliness and despair was suicide. He wrote a letter to his wife informing her of his plans and then spent a week working up the courage to pull the trigger. Cook wrote in his farewell message, "Money cannot buy happiness. I've tried it and found that it cannot be done. I've lost my wife, my son, and my home, and I'm doing the only thing left for me to do." The next suicide took place in 1931. A Manhattan Beach man named W.K. Norton, 46, disappeared from his home on Saturday, November 14th, and checked into the Cecil under the assumed name of James Willies from Chicago. His body was discovered by a maid in his hotel room on November 19th. He had apparently swallowed several capsules containing poison to end his life. The police found more of them in his vest pocket. Other items in his clothing revealed him to be Norton, a California man, not a Chicago man. A little less than a year later, 25-year-old Benjamin Dodich checked into the Cecil with a gun in his suitcase. When the maid entered his room to clean it on September 17, 1932, she discovered his body. He'd shot himself in the right temple only a few hours after he checked in. Detective Lieutenant Baggett of the Central Homicide Squad could offer no reason for the suicide. On July 27, 1934, a former Army Medical Sergeant, Louis D. Borden, was also discovered dead in his room at the Cecil. He cut his own throat with a straight razor. He left behind a series of farewell notes, each detailing his poor health, which was the main reason he decided to end his life. In one brief note, he asked that Mrs. Edna Hansener of Edmonds, Washington, be the, quote, "sole beneficiary of what little I have." Grace E. Magro became the first person to fall from her death on one of the hotel's upper floors on March 14, 1937. When she jumped, or fell, the cause of her death was never determined, from the ninth floor, telephone wires were ripped from poles during her descent and became entangled around her body. Police officers stated that W.M. Madison, a 26-year-old sailor from the USS Virginia who had been sharing a bed with Grace, was sleeping at the time of the occurrence and could give no explanation as to how or why she would have gone out the window. Leaving no note to explain his action, Marine Fireman Roy Thompson, age 38, took what police called a suicide leap from the 14th floor of the Cecil on Sunday, January 9, 1938. Registered at the hotel for several weeks, Thompson jumped from the window of his room. His body was found atop a skylight on a next-door building by a hotel employee who called the police. On Sunday, May 28, 1938, a 39-year-old Navy officer named Irwin C. Neblett checked into the hotel, took a large dose of poison, and then died soon after at an emergency hospital. He left a note behind that simply stated that he was, quote, "disgusted with life." A school teacher named Dorothy Skiger, age 45, was discovered in her room with the Cecil after swallowing poison on January 10, 1940. Still alive, she was rushed to the Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, but she succumbed to the poison a short time later. In 1947, Robert Smith, age 35, jumped to his death from a window on the hotel's seventh floor. In 1954, 55-year-old Helen Gurney also jumped from the seventh floor to her death. And in 1962, Julia Moore, age 50, jumped from an eighth floor window to perish on the sidewalk below. And here's the weird one, or weirder one. On Friday, October 12, 1962, Pauline Auten, age 27, plummeted to her death from the ninth floor of the Cecil, killing an elderly man strolling on the sidewalk below. Pauline had been discussing marital problems with her estranged husband, Dewey, in the hotel room, and when he left for dinner, she jumped from the window. At first, detectives thought Pauline and George Gianni, the elderly man, might have leapt from the window together, but they found that the man had his hands in his pockets and that he was still wearing his shoes, which investigators believe would have been knocked off if he'd fallen nine stories. In 1975, an unidentified woman jumped from the 12th floor of the building. She was registered as Allison Lowell when she checked into the hotel, but authorities were never able to discover her real identity. The most recent suicide associated with the Cecil occurred in 2015, when an unidentified man was found dead in front of the building. His body was in horrible condition, so it was presumed that he fell to his death, though no official cause of death was ever determined. In addition to the hotel's inordinate number of suicides, the Cecil is also infamous for its history of violence, murder, and grisly deaths. One of the most chilling incidents occurred on September 5, 1944, when 19-year-old Dorothy Purcell threw her baby boy to his death from an upper floor window at the Cecil. Dorothy had been staying at the hotel for several days with Ben Levine, a shoe salesman. She woke early that morning and realized she was about to give birth. Not wanting to wake up her bed companion, she went to the hotel restroom on the same floor and delivered the baby alone. After giving birth, Purcell claimed she believed the baby was stillborn and threw him out the window. The newborn's body landed on the roof of the building next door. Purcell was charged with murder and tried for the crime, but in January 1945, she was found not guilty by reason of insanity. Violence occurred again on June 4, 1964, when a hotel staff member found Pigeon Goldie Osgood dead in her room. Osgood, a retired telephone operator, was a resident at the hotel and was known locally for her daily trips to the park to feed the pigeons, hence the nickname. The hotel room had been ransacked. Next to Goldie on the bed was the Dodgers baseball cap she always wore and a paper bag filled with birdseed. Investigators who were called to the scene determined that she'd been raped, stabbed, and beaten to death. A few hours after the murder, police arrested Jacques Ellinger while he was walking through Pershing Square, where Osgood went to feed the birds. He was wearing bloodstained clothing. He admitted that he knew Goldie and had been near the hotel at the time the murder occurred, but denied any connection to her murder. He was arrested, but soon cleared of charges. As the police looked closer at the circumstances of Goldie's death, they realized that it had a remarkable resemblance to another recent murder. On May 16, 1964, Viva Brown was also murdered in a nearby hotel. The two slayings were linked after Goldie's autopsy report showed that she'd been killed and assaulted in the almost exact same manner as Viva Brown. But to this day, both murders remain unsolved. The most notorious murder linked to the Cecil Hotel didn't actually occur there, but the connection came from the fact that it was a favorite hangout of a young woman named Elizabeth Short, who will be the subject of a later multi-episode portion of the podcast. On January 15, 1947, Beth's murder became the first major crime to galvanize the city of Los Angeles after World War II. Her body was discovered in the Limert Park neighborhood of the city, and the case became highly publicized due to the graphic nature of the crime, which included her corpse having been mutilated and bisected at the waist. Beth spent her early years in Medford, Massachusetts, and Florida before relocating to California, where her father lived, seeking fame in the Hollywood movie industry. She acquired the nickname of the Black Dahlia after her death, thanks to her nightly prowls through the bars of Hollywood while dressed all in black. After the discovery of her body, the Los Angeles Police Department began an extensive investigation that produced over 150 suspects but yielded no arrests. To this day, Beth's murder remains unsolved, and it should come as no surprise that some witnesses still claim to occasionally spot Beth at the hotel bar, sitting alone and sipping a drink. The Cecil was also the home for two different serial killers in the 1980s and 90s. In the mid-1980s, Richard Ramirez, who became known as the Night Stalker, preyed on Los Angeles women, breaking into their homes and brutally raping and killing them. He used a wide variety of weapons, including handguns, knives, a machete, a tire iron, and a hammer. Ramirez, who was an avowed Satanist, never expressed any remorse for his crimes. The judge who upheld Ramirez's 13 death sentences remarked that his deeds exhibited, quote, cruelty, callousness, and viciousness beyond any human understanding. Before his capture, Ramirez often stayed at the Cecil and sometimes tossed his bloodstained clothing in the hotel's dumpster. In 1991, Austrian serial killer and journalist Johann Unterweger became a long-term resident of the Cecil Hotel when he was assigned to write an article about prostitution in America. He had already been convicted of murder in Austria in 1974, but was released after 15 years in prison and after convincing the authorities that he was reformed. Spoiler alert, he wasn't. In LA, he went back to his old habits and murdered three of the sex workers that he was writing about. He was arrested in 1992 and convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In LA, he went back to his old habits and murdered three of the sex workers that he was writing about. He was arrested in 1992, convicted of murder, and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And on the night of his sentencing, Unterweger hanged himself in his cell. But believe it or not, those are not the creepiest stories. There is one that's even creepier, and it's one that's played itself out on the internet over the last few years. It would be the strangest occurrence to take place at the Cecil Hotel, and it involved Alyssa Lamb, a 21-year-old Canadian college student who checked into the hotel on January 28, 2013. She was scheduled to leave LA and travel to Santa Cruz on January 31st, but when her parents didn't hear from her, they called the police. A little over 2 weeks after Alyssa's apparent disappearance, guests at the hotel began complaining of low water pressure. On the morning of February 19th, staff members went to check the hotel's four rooftop water tanks and found Alyssa's naked body floating in one of the tanks. Investigators struggled to make sense of Alyssa's final hours and her mysterious death. The hotel's roof is off limits to guests. The doors are kept locked, and only staff members have keys and passcodes. Any attempt to force open the doors would have triggered an alarm. Water tanks are also nearly impossible to access, and presuming that Alyssa was alone, also challenging to close from the inside. And then there was the elevator surveillance video recorded at the hotel. The hotel video showed Alyssa in one of the elevators on the date of her disappearance, behaving erratically. In the pixelated footage, she can be seen stepping into the elevator and pushing all the floor buttons. She steps in and out of the elevator, poking her head out sideways toward the hotel's hallways. She peers out of the elevator another few times before stepping out of the elevator entirely. The last minutes of the video show Alyssa standing by the left side of the door, moving her hand in random gestures and pressing herself into the corner of the elevator car. She appears to be speaking to someone, but she's alone in the video. Investigators released the clip as part of their investigation. It soon went viral, with many viewers finding it very unsettling to watch. The Los Angeles coroner's office ruled that Alyssa's death was the result of accidental drowning, with bipolar disorder contributing to the cause of death. After she checked into the hotel, she'd been staying in a hostel-like room with several other young people. After several complaints from others in this dorm room situation, she was moved out of the room by the hotel staff. It's believed she was not taking her medication properly or had missed several doses, leading to her strange behavior and possibly to her death. Still, though, many questions remain, fueling speculation and internet conspiracy theories. Some point to Alyssa's mental state, others suspect foul play, while others, especially those focused on the eerie elevator footage, believe paranormal forces were at work. Well, this comes as no surprise, based on the myriad of accounts that state that the Cecil is one of the most haunted places in the city. Its long history of suicide, death, violence, and murder make it a likely place to find restless, lingering ghosts. One incident with a ghost even made the local news in 2014. A Riverside boy named Costin Alderett noticed a window from the outside of the Cecil. He claims he got a creepy feeling, like the window was staring at him, so he took a photo of it. When he viewed the picture, he could see a transparent figure standing on the ledge of the window as if about to jump, or as if they were standing on a balcony that no longer existed. Other accounts of hauntings at the hotel are less documented, but are told and retold in newspaper stories, on podcasts, and even paranormal television shows, shows that often come to the Cecil looking for spirits. The hotel is plagued by shadow figures. Staff members are afraid to go into the basement because of the shadows that seem to chase them. Some guests have claimed to see shadow figures in their rooms or out of the corner of their eye. Guests are sometimes tormented while they sleep. There are accounts of bed sheets being tugged at, being sat on by an unseen person, as well as multiple accounts of guests dreaming of a strange figure in the room, and once they wake up, see the figure before it quickly disappears. One spirit has a penchant for hugging people while they're sleeping. However, the spirit then escalates to forced tickling. One guest recalled the spirit holding down her foot so she couldn't move and then tickling her until it felt like it would scratch her skin off. Guests have entered their rooms to see someone sleeping in their bed, but when they go to remove the blanket, it collapses with no one underneath it. The bathrooms are just as haunted as the bedrooms are. There are accounts of faucets and showers being turned on when no one is using them, and then when people go check, they're turned off before they arrive. Once the person begins to leave, the faucet turns back on, as if someone is playing a prank. Some guests hear a person singing or humming, often in the shower, when the room is empty. Guests can hear shrieking coming from the rooms where people died and sounds coming from rooms that should be vacant. Doors and windows can be heard opening, especially the roof access door that Alyssa Lamb used to get to the water tanks. Hotel staff members have recounted cleaning a room in its entirety and after looking away, turned back to find the room in shambles. And possibly, most terrifying of all, at night, you can hear screams coming from outside as if someone is falling from the top of the building. If you're a traveler in search of a haunted hotel, then the Cecil Hotel, or Stay on Main as it's called these days, may be just the place for you. If you're hoping to get a good night's sleep, though, I wouldn't count on it.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? And I don't mean like spells or incantations to trap spirits, you weirdos. I mean like a new language that could help you start communicating with more people on this plane today. Then I need to tell you about Rosetta Stone. Look, you know the brand, you know the name. They have the expertise and a 30-year legacy, which makes them more qualified than ever to help you learn a new language today. They've helped millions of people build the fluency and confidence to speak new languages. Now, this is the part where Troy would tell me that I made some kind of grammatical error, but he's not here right now, so like, I don't know, it's like speaking tongues. Rosetta Stone focuses on speaking practice for real-life scenarios to get you ready for real conversations with real people. Or maybe you can even learn how to use some different types of Ouija boards. I don't know. Either way, Rosetta Stone can help you learn faster and retain your new language better. Honestly, Rosetta Stone really would have come in handy for season 4 of New Orleans because I know we butchered some of those French names and I apologize once again. Now, you all know I have a 9-to-5 job when I'm not at the podcast factory, and Rosetta Stone actually helped me not make a total fool out of myself while I was in Brazil interviewing celebrities. Obrigado. And now I want to help you. So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, American Hauntings podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. Rosetta Stone, how language is learned. Wait, by the way, Troy, like where do words come from? Hey, no, don't walk away. Oh, Troy, where do words... Unique New York. The arsonist has oddly shaped feet. What other bullshit does he say? Oh, scotch. Down into my belly. Okay. Thanks for tuning in to the American Hauntings Podcast, the show where we discuss history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. We are now in season 5 of the podcast, Haunted Hollywood. I'm your co-host, Cody Beck, and with me is my co-host, author, historian, crime buff, and the founder of American Hauntings, Troy Taylor.
Hey, here we are.
Again. We're back again.
2 days before Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday.
Your favorite holiday,
it
huh?
is. It really is because Wait, it requires, what? Yeah, it does. It requires no real decorating. I mean, you can if you want.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like fake pilgrims or something. You
sure.
Know, which, it, you know, very historically incorrect. But, you know, it is my favorite. There's no gift giving involved. All you have to do is eat.
Yeah, but okay, here's my beef.
And I like the food that you have at Thanksgiving.
I think turkey is like the worst meat.
No, I don't think so. You're just not having the right turkey.
It's so easy to do it wrong, and it's so dry and bland and boring.
No, it isn't.
I'm just saying. I mean, give me a ham.
Deep fried turkey.
I do like a deep fried turkey, yes. But it rarely, I feel like, does that get done because it's so much more work. Well, and I don't know.
I like turkey.
Well, so. I
liked everything that goes with it. Thanksgiving.
It's a holiday
this year,
of sides.
Theoretically, will suck. So, well, according to everyone, it's going to be a lousy Thanksgiving. But
With that attitude,
I disagree. But that's what we're hearing.
Oh man. Okay. Well,
stay home. Don't see anybody. Don't spend time with your family. You know,
a virtual Thanksgiving. Okay. Well, is there anything coming up that you are looking forward to?
Well, what I will tell you that, as you know, we do have events that are coming up this winter.
Uh-huh.
We have still have a few spots left for the Abraham Lincoln dinner on December the 4th.
And is then he going to be there?
No, he won't. Oh. He was not able to make it this year.
Damn it.
Because
of COVID?
He won't. Yeah, because of COVID. He won't be there. But we do have dinners coming up this winter. We have ghost hunts coming up this winter. All this stuff that we've posted already is pretty exciting. We also have on February 6th is the free Dead of Winter event that we do every year. We have info on the website about it, but we also have, you know, some other things that are going on. We'll talk more about it as it gets a little closer. It's still a little early for that. The only thing I could tell people that if you are interested in coming and you are interested in taking part in the after hour stuff. Mm-hmm. We have a ghost hunt this year. A couple of like seance events this year.
Nice.
Also, we have a bus tour at night, like a winter Dead of Winter bus tour.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff you should get signed up for now because that stuff is filling up.
Yeah.
The other stuff is, you know, it's free. You know, we do it as a fundraiser for food banks. You know, that's the reason for the event. And you know, anybody can come for that. And we do have a plan, even if we're still in, you know, have some restrictions of, you know, around, we have everything is worked out. We figured out how to do it. You know, it took some thought, but we did figure it out. So it's going to be cool. So put February 6th on your calendar. And I think really the biggest announcement I have right now between now and the end of the year, or at least through December 31st,
mm-hmm.
Is the return of our quarantine sale from earlier in the year. Bringing that back. We're not calling it a quarantine sale now. We're calling it a haunted holiday sale. But the deal's still the same.
Sure.
The promo code SPOOKY gets you 20% off any of the books from the online store. And we're giving away the free book bags again.
Mm-hmm.
Except this time it's going to have holiday art, which was created by artist Chris Bonney, who does really cool, really cool spooky art.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I asked him to do a Mary Lynn, the Welsh Christmas horse.
Oh, sure.
The skeletal horse. He did that for us, and it's going to have those bags with our logo too, along with Chris's art. So it's going to be a collectible, and it'll only be available if you get it free when you do this sale.
Mm-hmm.
So promo code SPOOKY, 20% off the books. It started on November 13th, and it's going to run through December 31st, and then that will be the end of the sale. And hopefully we won't have to bring it back.
Right.
We won't be forced to, because honestly, you know, that, as I think that we've already told people numerous times, that actually kept our doors open this year,
yeah,
having that sale, and people were great about it. But we thought, you know, let's bring it back for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
It gives people a chance to stock up on stuff and, you know, give some good spooky gifts away for the holidays. So you could find everything at AmericanHauntings.net, and that was our main website. We've got links to everything on there. We don't advertise the sale on our website, so you have to be in the end. You've got to be a podcast listener or a newsletter subscriber or a Patreon, a supporter to get all this stuff. So
awesome. Yeah, we'll look forward to that then. Let's dive into some listener reviews. This one, I'm really excited to read this one.
Okay.
It's from LD11122, and it's just titled, Here It Goes. So it says, I really enjoy your podcast, but I've hesitated on writing a review. I know you both like to talk about them, so there's a lot of pressure as a fan to do a great job. Just kidding. But I do love the pod, and I hope you both keep it going. We'd love to go on one of your haunting tours, hopefully on the other side of COVID. You're both funny and entertaining. My favorite season so far has been The Axeman, but still very excited for the current season. Can't wait to hear your take on 1948 LA. So many interesting murders. Again, keep it up. Love the banter. Come for the story, but stay for the after show. Well, thank you so much. I really hope you did a great job right out of the gate. Really, I could have used a couple more compliments about us specifically, but no, you did a great job. Thank you so much for your review. This next one, there's no name associated with this one. It's just like, a period, a semicolon, a colon, 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 and then a parentheses, so it looks like a frowny face. I don't know. It's titled Great Storytelling and So Interesting. Troy is the best at what he does and definitely is educated on all his topics. It's so much better to hear the history along with the scary stories, and Cody always asks the questions that I myself would ask. Keep up the awesome work, guys. Well, thank you very much. Cool. I thought this was going to be a sad review because of your name. But yeah, thank you so much for the review. Are you ready to dive into Hollywood's Haunted Hotels Part 2?
Sure. Yep, I'm ready.
So you really started off this monologue by going in on Hollywood.
You really knocked
them down a peg.
Yeah.
Right?
A little bit, I guess.
Yeah. When was the last time you were in LA?
I don't know. Not that long ago.
Yeah?
Yeah, not that long ago.
How do you feel about this? What was your feeling about the city the last time you were there? I'm curious.
Oh, I like to go. Yeah. I just would never want to live there.
Yeah, it seems, you know, I've never been. It seems like a terrible place.
Well, no, I wouldn't say it's a terrible place, but it's definitely shiny on the surface and
sure.
Really, you know, seamy underneath, you know, and so, I mean, which makes for great stories, you know, it does,
right.
It really does, and it has a great history, but it's, you know, it can be a pretty awful place,
yeah.
But it is a fun place to visit. It's just, I don't want to live there.
You can't live there.
Yeah, I would never live
there. Is the traffic really as bad as everybody says?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. when you get on the freeways, it certainly is. It's really bad. And I mean, I get it. I mean, Los Angeles started out as a car culture kind of town. Mm-hmm. To get to where you want to go, you've got to be in a car, you know. But then there are other places that are a great place to go for a drive, you know, like the Pacific Coast Highway. It's mm-hmm. beautiful, you know, along there, and it's a fun drive, and it's usually not backed up like all the freeways are. But yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. You know?
Hopefully someday I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's still a cool city.
Yeah.
It is.
I've never been to California.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vegas is as far out as I've got. Never been in Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many places I need to check out.
Yeah, yeah. I like California. Again, I don't say I want to live there. But,
right.
Although, I mean, there are parts of it that would be a nice place to live, unless, mm-hmm. you know, it's on fire. You know,
that's the
problem you get into there. So, I mean, I love San Diego, but again, I don't know that I want to live there.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a great state to visit.
Sure.
So.
Right. I'm going to have to check it out. Well, let's
put me on the spot there. I don't want to piss anybody off.
No, that's 100% why I did it.
Yeah.
So let's talk some hotels. So the Cecil Hotel, you talked about how you basically could have gone on and on and on about this and didn't want to cut stuff out.
Right. That's why this ended up with an episode of its own.
And I think
just because
that's justified.
I felt it was necessary let's be honest. The reason that there's two reasons people know about the Cecil Hotel. They mm-hmm. know about it from American Horror Story because it was, you know, it's based on that. It's also based on, I mean, it's based on other hotel stories too, but mm-hmm. mostly it's based on the Cecil. And, there's that, and of course, then, you know, the Alyssa Lamb story.
Yes,
I mean, that's,
and we'll talk about that.
That's the reason that people know it, but there's so much more to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a reason that, you know, there's a reason they chose it to inspire this, you know, the season of American Horror Story.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's so much to talk about, you know, about this place, and, you know, it's a victim of its location
for now, big time.
But I mean, that doesn't explain every other thing that has happened there. And
sure.
And you know what? Like every hotel, you can find plenty of murders and suicides if you want to look for them.
Right.
But this place does have an overabundance in a building that's less than 100 years old. So, right. Yeah. You know.
And I'm looking at my outline now, and it's literally going to go the suicides, the murders, the serial killers.
Yeah.
So it's currently called Stay on Main and built in the 1920s by hotel entrepreneur.
Not that that did any good to change the name.
They kept the sign up, too, like
well, the sign's still painted on. It would be too hard to cover over, so they just didn't bother. And,
sure.
You know, I mean, you could change the name, but that's lipstick on a pig.
Right.
You know, I mean, everybody knows what it is. They know the place, and they're going to come there no matter what you call it.
They should lean into it, maybe. But.
Yeah, and I mean, they were just trying to rebrand it. But, you know, you can't rebrand a hotel for tourist traffic when you're a half block from Skid Row.
Yeah.
You just can't. You know, it's still not going to – you're still going to attract the wrong element no matter what you do.
Yes.
You know.
So built in the 1920s by hotel entrepreneur, because that's a thing, William Banks Hanner. Of course it was. And then you mentioned the Depression hit, and now that area is Skid Row.
Which came later. I mean, that wasn't like right after the Depression, but, you know, it eventually – just deteriorated. It's not a great part of LA anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and again, what
can you do?
What can you do?
Yeah.
You know, there's no way around it.
So, well, let's dive into the first section, the suicides. The first of many suicides took place in 1927. Perry Ormond Cook shoots himself on January 22nd. And part of the note says, money cannot buy happiness, Cook wrote in his farewell message. I've tried it, and I find that it cannot be done. I've lost my wife, my son, my home, and I'm going to do the only thing left for me to do. That's terrible. Spoiler alert, this is going to be a really depressing episode.
It is. It really is.
And it's just going to be me.
There's no way around it.
Yeah, it's going to be me reading details about terrible things. And again, we're never making fun of the victims or anything. I'm just trying to make light of terrible things that we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
The next suicide is in 1931. W.K. Norton swallowed poison on November 14th. Then a year later, Benjamin Doditch shoots himself. No one ever finds out the reason. Those are the ones that always baffled me.
Yeah, no note left behind or anything. Yeah. They just check into a hotel and kill themselves.
Yeah, and it seems very common, too. Another thing that we're going to talk about, too, it seems like a lot of military people list.
Yeah, well, there was an army base there, and there, you know, and a naval base, and so you had a lot of, I mean, it was the West Coast, and so that was something you wanted to protect, because even in the 1930s, things were starting to heat up a little bit with, you know, Japan and all that kind of stuff, and so you always had military installations in that area.
Okay, well,
then after the war started, they were sure that, you know, LA was going to be hit by the Japanese, you know, and there were Japanese sub sightings off the coast and all kinds of stuff. So it was a legitimate concern. But yeah, that's why there's so many military and sailors mixed into this.
Fair
1930s
enough.
And 40s stuff.
Okay, and then let's see, July 27th, Louis D. Borden cuts his own throat and left lots of notes.
Yeah.
This is just a curious way, I don't know, to go about it, I guess. And then
seems awful to me. I mean, you know, again, it depends on what floor you're on, but dude, jump out the window. I mean,
we might have had a conversation about this earlier.
Yeah,
if
you're sure that you really want to do it, then you get on the highest floor you can and jump, because you're not going to bounce.
Right.
You're definitely not going to survive.
Right.
But what if you survive after you've cut your own throat, which is doable?
It is.
It depends on which side you cut. I don't know. I'm going to pass on that one.
Hotel rooms are the worst. Okay, so Gracie Margo becomes the first person to fall to her death in 1937. There's going to be a lot more. And ends up getting entangled with telephone wires.
Telephone wires.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things. One, like, wouldn't you see where you're kind of trying to go? I guess you don't care.
Well, not really. I mean, you know, she jumps from the ninth floor and the telephone wires are not anywhere close. So she probably couldn't even see them.
Okay, that's
fair. And it was, I think it was at night. Because, you know, she's in bed with the sailor.
Who doesn't know
why she jumped out the window. Got to be a lie.
You think?
There had to have been something
that happened.
She would have jumped out the window.
I just imagine, like, okay, you're in town having a good time, one night stand kind of thing, and then the chick you're with jumps out the window.
Good point.
That's got to be just
good point.
Bizarre, and it might ruin your dating life for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know. Roy Thompson jumps in 1938 again with no note. Irwin C.
from the 14th floor, which you can put in quotation marks because that would actually be the 13th floor.
Okay, so. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
I think I know we have
it's
before.
Superstition. And, yeah. I mean, it was just
there's still buildings like that.
Yes, it was. Well, they don't usually they just new ones like aren't that. Built that way. They just leave them that way. There's lots of older hotels that you go to, especially in big cities. And when you get in the elevator and you look in the old ones, mm-hmm. you'll find there is no 13th floor. It was just considered unlucky. And now we see, you know, remember that this is one hotel we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And there were others that we talked about in the last episode. And, you know, and we've talked about other hotels. And I've written a lot about haunted hotels. And every one of these hotels that have this, you know, that are said to be haunted have a very dark past, and a lot of them involve suicides and murders mm-hmm. and things. And so, you know, a 13th floor in the early 1900s or, you know, late 19th century, that was considered an unlucky number.
Yeah.
And people would not want to stay on the 13th floor, so they just didn't have one.
Yeah.
Even though the 14th floor really was the 13th right, floor, right. But that's, you know... but yeah, that's the reason behind that. That's the reasoning behind it. And, you know, the entire architectural world was revolving around
right.
people's fear of, trichtophobia, which is the fear of 13. So, you know, so, I mean, you know, people still talk about the Friday the 13th, which we got one coming up. Oh, we just passed one.
Yeah.
So November had a Friday the 13th, and I always watch for them because they're good days to have events. That's normally what we do, you know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that people, they catered to that superstition for
so
years.
So weird.
Yeah.
I've seen a few buildings like that in downtown St. Louis, mm-hmm. even in the elevators.
Yeah, there
and are. It's just, it baffles me.
I see it in
but
Chicago a
cool.
lot if you stay in an older place. You see it a lot.
That's crazy. So, okay. Irwin C. Neblett takes poison in 1938. Dorothy Skiger takes poison again and eventually dies in the hospital mm-hmm. later, 1940. Robert Smith jumps in 1947. Helen Gurney in 54. Julia Moore in 62. Pauline Otten in 62.
Now, that's an interesting
this
one.
This is a terrible
that's
one.
It is. And that's not your normal jump from a window suicide.
Yeah, it lands on an old guy just minding his own business.
Walking down the street, yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah, like I said, they when the detectives got there, they thought they had like jumped together.
Right, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah,
something
but then discovered, you know, he... You know, had his hands in his pockets and was just walking down the street.
It's
and
not funny.
A woman plunges out of the window and lands on him from the ninth floor.
Because he still had his fucking shoes on, right?
And so...
It's not funny, but I can't stop laughing.
But it's weird.
It is.
It's definitely weird.
And then another interesting one. So, unidentified woman jumps in 75. We still don't know who she was.
No, they don't know who she was.
That baffles me, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I guess I...
Well, you know, it's you know, when we're here in Alton, we talk a lot about... You know, the Pearl Sons that committed suicide at the Mineral Springs Hotel.
Yeah.
Nobody knew who she was at first either because she checked in under a false name.
Right.
And so, you know, back when you didn't, you know, people didn't, I mean, by 1975, believe me, the Cecil was not taking credit cards. So you could pay cash and check into a room and say your name was anything.
Sure.
You know, and I'm sure that's what she did. And back, you know, before people were all using credit cards and Diners Club and, you know, that kind of stuff. The early credit cards, you paid cash when you checked in and didn't really matter what your name was, you know, John Smith and Mrs. Smith, you know, I mean, that's the thing. So
I'm just surprised nobody put it together.
It's not that big of a surprise. I mean, even the guy in 2015, the last recorded suicide that I could find, they found him dead outside the building and they assumed he jumped. They still don't know for sure because they don't know if he was a guest or not. I mean, whoever he wasn't registered there, but because of the condition that he was in when they scraped him off the sidewalk, they knew he had jumped from the building, but nobody knew anything for sure.
So they still don't know.
No, that was the last one that I could find.
Wow.
So,
I mean, I figured nowadays, fingerprints, dental records.
Yeah,
something
but you that. Know what, though? You got to remember, again, it's a half block off Skid Row. So this could have been anybody who walked into the hotel and took the elevator up to an upper floor and jumped out a window.
Right.
As we will find out in our next story, there are windows in all the rooms, including the bathrooms. You could have jumped out anywhere.
Yeah, let's just do this. Okay.
Because I'm going to move on to our murders
to the murder section.
Violent deaths.
Dorothy Purcell, 1944. So she gives birth and then throws her baby out the window, claiming it was stillborn.
Yeah, she thought it was stillborn. Well, and the weird thing was that she's shacked up with the shoe salesman.
Yeah.
And
doesn't want him to know?
Apparently, I don't know if he doesn't know she's pregnant.
How do you
or
not?
maybe it was his thing, you know, sure, to, you know, it's hard to say.
That's true.
But she wakes up, goes to the bathroom down on the main floor and gives birth. And then opens the window and throws the baby out because she said that he was stillborn. But on the other hand, you know, a couple of months later, they find her guilty by reason of insanity. Or not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right.
So for all we know, she just threw the baby out the window and it landed on the roof of the building next door.
Ew.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So yikes.
Baby with the bath
so
water.
This place is, well, again, though, it's this hotel is... invites this kind of thing,
I think it does. The next one,
it's a bad location. Just bad.
That's what I'm hearing and what
it's
I'm reading.
Sour, you know, as Stephen King would say, the land was sour, you know. So,
oh god, okay. Pigeon Goldie Osgood again, 1964.
She lives at the hotel, so we're gonna get back into the discussion we had last time about people living in hotels because back then that was still an acceptable thing. And by 1964, this place is a flea bag, so it's not really a surprise that people are staying there permanently in the rooms. You know, or living there a month at a time.
Yeah, and so basically she's found raped, stabbed, beaten to death. I'm kind of confused.
In her room.
In her room. Yeah. I'm kind of confused about some of this. So Jock Inlinger is arrested wearing bloodstained clothing, but clear to the charge. Did he just have different blood on
his
clothes?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot more to that story, and I didn't... I mean, I can put all the detail in.
I figured,
but it's, you know, she would go down to the park every day and feed the pigeons. That's how she got her nickname. And then they found her in her hotel room, and it had been ransacked. And she's dead. She's been raped. She's been stabbed and beaten to death. And then so the police are called, and they're going down to where she normally feeds the birds. Mm-hmm. And they find this goofy guy down there who's like semi-incoherent, this Jacques Inlinger, and he's got blood on his clothes. Now, he wasn't like soaked in blood, but it was enough to make him a suspect.
Is it just like drug addict kind of
stuff? Yeah, just some burnout. Yeah. And, you know, he admitted that he knew her because she came there every day. He's probably a panhandler from, you know, Skid Row, goes down to the park, you know, looking for money.
Right.
And that's how he knows her. He probably talks to her all the time. And he probably said, oh, yeah, I know her, you know. And that's, you know, back, this is 60s, this is still pre-Miranda.
Sure.
You know, you could arrest anybody for anything. No one had any rights. And so they hauled him in and then found out that he was just a goof. And
I'm surprised they didn't end up pinning it on him.
Yeah, I mean, apparently he had enough information. And then this other thing came along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, detectives heard about this other case that had happened almost identical in a nearby hotel. And they began to think that they were linked. You know, Goldie's autopsy showed that her and Viva Brown died almost exactly the same way, but they never got any further with it. I mean, it was never solved. The two murders were never solved, but, you know, there it is linked to the Cecil Hotel. Yet another murder happening inside this building.
This place sucks. Okay, so something we're just going to touch on briefly.
We'll talk more about it later.
But we have to. Yes. Elizabeth Short, The Black Dahlia.
Yes.
This is one, when I asked you, I think, if you could just get one wish granted or whatever and know, you know, how one thing went down or, you know, the answer to any kind of question. I think we were talking about Villisca probably at this point.
Yeah, I think
I said,
too.
You know, if there's one crime kind of that you could just have solved and know what happened, what would it be? And you said The Black Dahlia.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much do you want to talk about this right now? What do you
Well, you know, I think that what I mentioned in this is enough because we're going to have probably a multi-part episode later on about the Black Dahlia.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think people are familiar enough to know who she was. And I think I covered it pretty well in this, just gave it a quick rundown. But in complete honesty, this is a story that's told about the bar at the Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily believe
it. Never confirmed.
I mean, you know, I know she used to go to a lot of different places, and it's very, very possible this was, because at the time, in the 40s, this was still a happening place.
Sure, and she probably wandered in
there. She probably did go in there for drinks. I mean, it was a good place to meet people, in the hotel, and, well, I don't want to get into that, but as far as the circumstances of her death goes, it wouldn't surprise me to find her hanging around hotel bars.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you know, they say that her ghost shows up there You know, they say, I've also heard that, you know, some people believe it was one of the last places she was seen. It wasn't.
Sure.
It wasn't. So the last place she was seen was at the Biltmore. And that's, we'll talk about that later. Yep. But
I'm excited.
But they do
that.
Talk about her, you know, people claim that they see her ghost. But the fact that she may have drank there, that's enough to link her to the story. So
you gotta mention
I don't put a huge amount of, you know, stock in that part of the story, but it's interesting and it's worthy of mention.
Yeah.
Well, with everything else going on in this place, I mean, you know, why not?
So. Why not? With everything else going on, let's jump into the serial killers here. Yeah. So two serial killers were known to have stayed there at least for a length of time. I'm going to talk about the first one, Richard Ramirez. So when we've talked about this before, but people will ask me all the time, who's your favorite serial killer? And I'm like, no, that's a fucked up question. I don't have a favorite, but there are some that intrigue me others, some that are more interesting. Richard Ramirez has always been one of the people that I bring up, and I bring it up for a couple of reasons. One, scares the fuck out of me.
It's terrifying. Scary. Well, you know what's scary about him is that there was no rhyme or reason to any of these murders.
He has no pattern or victim.
I mean, his general pattern was he's going to break into somebody's house and kill them.
Yes.
That's it. That's the whole pattern.
Yep.
Because you never knew what he was going to do, what he'd do to his victims, what weapon he was going to use, how he chose the locations, nothing.
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 It's just a true psychopath. Yeah. And you know, a lot of people, it's like, okay, they kill people that look like them, or they target, you know, sex workers or things like this. But he was just kind of like men, women, children.
And he used the satanic thing to his advantage because it was the mid-80s.
Yeah.
You know, it was the middle of satanic panic where there were Satanists everywhere.
Yeah, the rest
and,
of us a bad
you
rap.
Know, he used that as just to get attention.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I mean,
and
he wasn't.
American Horror Story leaned into so much.
Sure, of course they did. But, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, no real Satanists would have had anything to do with it.
Yeah,
so
of course.
He was a Satanist of his own making, like people who start their own churches in their garage. He was as true a Satanist as, you know, Jim Jones was a legitimate pastor. I mean, you know, he was definitely doing his own thing, and that was a good way to get attention, cutting a pentagram in his palm for his trial and stuff. But it got a lot of attention because that was a hot topic at the time.
Yeah.
You know, that was a, you know, Satanists were everywhere, Geraldo and, you know, all this stuff.
So, Geraldo.
Yeah. So you just, you know, that was all for show, but it made him seem a lot more sinister. And don't get me wrong, he was.
Right.
I mean, this guy was completely, and I would say insane, but it's functional insane.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. It wasn't like he was really mentally ill. He just was a
evil
person.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, he was just evil.
Yeah.
But stayed at the Cecil.
Yep.
You know, and that's where some of his bloodstained clothing was recovered. Was
the
Cecil.
Throw it out of the dumpster.
So
it was.
I mean, this was a guy who was committing these crimes. I mean, we could spend all day on this, but you know, was committing these crimes and really wasn't even trying to hide it.
No, he
you
didn't know, give a fuck.
It's just, they just took him a long time to catch him. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, there's, I'm sure, a lot of reasons. There's probably a lot more to the story as to why he was so hard to catch.
Sure.
But I don't know. I don't
probably
know what
laziness
it was.
And that police
work.
Yeah,
just, you know, or just, you know, crossing jurisdictions. I mean, we talked about all that. So,
I did appreciate, though, in American Horror Story, I'll tell you, when they did catch him, because I know that a lot of that is accurate, where the crowd runs him down like that.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that. The next one we're talking about, Austrian serial killer and journalist.
Who I knew nothing about.
And I really.
Johann Unterweger.
I wrote this down. Yeah. I said, I have no idea who this is.
I didn't either. I had to look him up and find a little information about him when I was working on this, and this is pretty much it. I mean, you know, what was interesting is that he had already been convicted of murder in Austria and spent 15 years in prison, and then he was reformed and they let him out. And it's like, you know, they got a different kind of prison system than we do, but they let him out. And then he was working for a magazine, was going to write an article about like S&M clubs and bondage and prostitution in America. So off they sent him to LA to write his story, working on an expense account, you know, and is staying at the Cecil. So it wasn't much of an expense account by 1991. So he ends up murdering three prostitutes and gets caught.
It just seems like he'd be the first person they'd probably check in on.
Yeah, you'd think. But you know, coming from a different country. He's there on a visa. You know, he's off the grid, and it's 1991.
Right.
So again, we're not talking about great forensics and all sure. that kind of stuff. It's still a little early for that. And then when he gets caught and they sentenced him to life without parole, I'm guessing he decided he did not want to go back to prison.
Oh, yeah, that day, right?
Yeah, so he hanged himself in his cell after his hearing. So,
coward. Anyway, okay, so let's move on to, honestly, one of the wildest stories I've ever heard. I knew about this beforehand, and I've seen the video, and there's a lot of...
I've read an entire book about it, which...
Really?
Yeah, the book was mostly just filled with... the same kind of conjecture that we've put sure. into, 10 minutes of the thing, but
yes.
it's an entire book, and it's, but a lot of it's about a guy searching for answers. So you get a lot of his own take on things, but he spends a lot of time talking to like internet conspiracy nuts uh-huh. and stuff like that, who everybody's got an answer or a secret, or,
yeah.
you know, there are shadow people in the video. There are extraterrestrials
sure.
and all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff. I mean, for whatever reason, if you go on YouTube and put in Alyssa Lam
mm-hmm.
video, you will get, first you will get like from CBS News, the actual video,
uh-huh. which is
stop there.
It's disturbing enough.
Just stop there.
Yeah.
Because everything after that is like everyone's crazy hosted, I'm going to be on video and talk about this video.
Yeah.
And it is just one after another. And the further you get down the list, the crazier they get.
Yeah.
You know,
well, okay.
Is this a ghost in the corner? No, that's
no.
her shadow.
Yeah.
And you know,
what do you,
it's still really weird.
What do you think happened?
I think she was off her meds. That's what I think.
Uh-huh.
happened. So, I mean, she was on, she was on bipolar medication
uh-huh.
and wasn't taking it. That's what I think happened. Now that's as far as the video goes.
Yeah.
But I think that someone in this skeezy hotel took advantage of her
yeah.
and killed her, murdered her and killed her, and dumped the body in that water tank, which would, I get it, it would have been difficult to do, but not impossible.
Not impossible.
The hotel refuses to take any responsibility for what happened,
oh, yeah.
but they won't let anybody, they won't, you can't like... check. They wouldn't let people check to see, make sure the doors really worked. A lot of the, the footage disappeared, security camera
yeah,
stuff,
yeah, yeah.
And they would always say, oh no, you couldn't have gotten that door open. You can get any door open.
Yeah.
And, an alarm would have went off. Really? In this dump?
Sure.
Somebody took her out on the roof and dumped her in that tank thinking that she wouldn't be found. And then for the next 3 weeks, people are complaining about water pressure and talking about the water tastes funny.
Yeah.
Because she's been stewing in that tank
yeah.
for 3 weeks, or however, it was a couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah.
So that's what I think happened. I think she was off her meds. Somebody took advantage of that fact. And one of the other guests who were there was somebody probably living there by the month or mm-hmm. whatever, or somebody came in off Skid Row. And because you don't tell me that the security's so tight,
sure.
this place, that no one could just wander in back then.
People,
I know they could.
People have done that and then just
yeah.
jumped out.
I mean,
I
just
there.
Don't, this is less than 10 years ago, but that place has been bad for a long time. And I honestly think that that's what happened.
Yeah.
Somebody killed her. I don't think there's anything supernatural about it. I just think it is in her particular case. That's not to say this hotel isn't haunted, because look at all the stuff that has gone on there.
Right. And we'll talk
and
about
this
ghosts.
Is one more bad thing that's happened. I mean, we could probably, if we did the research right, I could probably write an entire book about the girl who threw her baby out the window,
yep.
and question why she did it and what happened. And, and I think this is the same thing. This caught on because there's security footage and it got leaked.
Yeah.
And it got onto the internet, and the internet is the internet.
And it's creepy as hell.
And 10 years ago, or, 7-8 years ago when this happened, it became a viral video, fairly early viral video. And it got everybody's attention. And, once you put something out there onto the internet, which is the super highway of, I don't even know, anybody can see it, and anybody with their tinfoil hat is going to get involved.
Yeah.
And so there we go. And so you get a lot of really bizarre speculation. And, you know, I don't think there was a demon there or a ghost there. And when she's waving her arms, talking to people, she's talking to herself or the imaginary person she thinks is standing in front of her.
Right.
And I think that we need to look at this. I mean, yes, it's weird. Yes, it's bizarre. Yes, it's unsolved, but it's also super sad.
Yeah.
Because here is a woman whose, you know, mental illness has taken control of her, and her, you know, medication / doctor / whatever failed her.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is. She's off her meds, and it led to her death. Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time it's ever happened. This just seems to be weirdest. Seems to be one of the weirdest time, and we can all watch it. You know, she has become the modern-day version of a freak show.
Yeah.
You know, we are watching a young girl fall apart and on camera and lose her mind. But right. She's already lost her mind because she's off her medication.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's more sad than anything else. But I mean, I do think there's foul play involved. That's how she ended up dead. But I don't think there's anything paranormal about what happened to her.
Yeah.
I really don't. Well, I mean, that's my opinion, but I don't. I mean, there's plenty of other things about this hotel that probably could be or are paranormal. I don't think that Alyssa Lamb is,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely had an impact on some pop culture things.
For sure.
For one, there's a big Reddit post about like this elevator game that they say playing, which is a fun story.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's a sad story.
It's sad when you realize kind of where it came from. And then there's another podcast. I hate recommending other podcasts that don't recommend us, but there's a podcast I listen to called Tannis, which is from Pacific Northwest Stories, I believe. The people that do a podcast called the Black Tapes.
Oh,
podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
And Tannis is like their sister podcast. And they pull in for Tannis. They'll do things like this and things that have some kind of truth, but then they'll roll them into their like fictionalized story.
Sure.
It's really interesting. So I'd recommend checking that out if you're interested. And just again, we've been talking about suicides and murders and mental health. And I've been just laughing and making jokes and things, and I think it's really important to just be like, don't kill yourself, get help.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be making light of
don't
these
get off
things.
Your medication
don't you get know, off your medication
you're
especially
on it
this
for a reason
and you know? This year has been really really tough on a lot of people, so please get help if you need it, and don't think that we're making light of any of this. Let's move on to some of the ghosts. One thing I wanted to ask is, have you ever stayed at the Cecil?
No.
Never?
No. I've got a thing about hotels.
You
We've
do.
Been through this.
You do.
I don't stay at hotels that open to the outside. That's my number one rule.
Uh-huh.
I don't stay in motor hotels, as in motels.
Right.
I've been doing this way too long.
Sure.
And bad things happen in motels and motor lodges these days. And I have a, you know, I just don't. Someplace like the Cecil, I have no interest in staying.
That's
there.
Fair.
And not as a guest. I mean, just to go there to poke around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, but, and I've been there, been in the lobby.
Uh-huh.
I've never been through the whole hotel, but I have no interest in staying there. It's way too skeezy for me.
You can see Troy's face when I asked
him
that
that's
question.
Not happening. So
I just wanted to confirm. Let's talk about what Costin Alderate takes a photo.
Yeah, that was I tracked down the picture, and I don't know.
You're not convinced?
I mean, it was featured like in the news and stuff, and it was a local news item, you know.
Uh-huh.
And in the wake of, you know, you're talking about the year after Alyssa Lamb, and there's still a lot of, you know, a lot of focus on the Cecil, and so the story made the news, and I don't know if it's
that's
anything.
Fair.
I mean, it could be, I guess, but
that's fair.
I don't know. I think there's plenty of other material at the Cecil besides that picture. It's just worthy of mention.
Yeah, right. Well, you mentioned the hotel's plagued by shadowy figures. People are tormented in their sleep. There's a ghost that hugs people, which seems kind of nice. It's at least
while they're sleeping. I'm going to pass.
Look,
thanks.
You know what? Everybody needs comfort.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the bathrooms are also haunted. And that's kind of the point I wanted to end on, just because of where we are now at the Best Western, because you all have at least seen some weird things or felt some weird things in some
there
of these
have
bathrooms,
been,
right?
Yeah, there. Well, you know, there are stories about. I mean, we know of some deaths that have occurred here at the. I mean, every hotel. This is nothing against this particular
it's just
hotel.
Every hotel.
Every hotel has
the sheer numbers game.
Die in them. Yeah, and there are some rooms here that do have activity, mm-hmm. including one particular room where there have been flying shampoo bottles and things off the counter.
Was that you or is that
it's
Lisa?
True. It's true.
So, I can't remember.
Yeah, but it has happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, like, I think one time a group of us were recording the podcast and heard a loud noise in the bathroom. And the shampoo bottles had gone from the sink into the bathtub.
Was that when my brother was recording?
Yes,
it
was. It was when he was here. Yeah,
this bullshit.
Yeah. So, I mean, strange things happen.
Yeah.
Here. So, yeah, I don't know the cause behind all of them because I don't think they want to know. Uh-huh. I don't think that like Jacinda.
Are they going to be mad that we're talking about this?
No, I don't think so. We've talked about it at the conference before. Okay. So, and we've had other rooms where people with the knocking on the doors and stuff, you know, that are not, sure. you know, people who come for the conference and stuff. We'll talk about that stuff. So, yeah. So bathrooms are a thing. So
fair enough. And I think we also talked about it too. I was like, whenever I think I was using the sink in there or something, and I was like, my thumbprint is like so prominent on here. I was like, do you think they do that because so many people commit crimes in hotel rooms? It's like they want to make DNA evidence just like evident.
I always wipe down everything before I leave.
Well, yeah, I bleach the hell out of this place. Yeah,
exactly.
So it is now time for our Ghostwriter segment. If you have a question or comment about the world of the macabre, you can email us at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com.
I would say so.
So this first one comes to us from Tara. It says, hi, Troy and Cody. I've been a fan of the American Hauntings podcast since discovering your season 4 New Orleans episodes earlier this year. You guys have an incredible podcast, and it quickly became one of my favorites. Thank you. I don't normally reach out to engage with podcast hosts, but I just listened to season 5 bonus episode 6 about the Los Feliz murder house, and I felt compelled to share some comments with you. I'm absolutely loving this season because I'm a Southern California native, and I'm familiar with most of the locations you've been discussing on the podcast. I worked for Sony Pictures and Disney Studios for several years out of college, and I spent a lot of time at both Culver and Paramount Studios. I was also a police officer with the LAPD for almost 12 years, and I worked in both Northeast and Hollywood divisions for a good portion of my career. I responded to the Los Feliz murder house on Glendower at least 15 to 20 times for alarms and trespassing calls during 2008-2012. I became borderline obsessed with the location and its history for a couple years, and I would often convince my partner to go check on the house just for fun while working graveyard shift or on a slow night. I peered through the windows countless times, fascinated by all the items seemingly transfixed in time. I can't remember it all now as it's been several years, but I recall the Christmas tree and wrapping paper rolls, the faded shag carpet, ladies' stockings hung over a tub in the downstairs bathroom, decaying boxes of house cleaning products on the bathroom shelves, and the horrific looking black cage surrounding the second story window of a bedroom that was rumored to have been the eldest daughter's room where she was kept locked away. Based on my personal experiences there, I was more creeped out on several occasions and definitely believe the place is haunted. I moved to another state a couple years ago and no longer live in California. As you said, Troy, it's a great place to visit, but you never want to live there, .. But listening to this season's podcast has brought back a ton of memories. I also learned several new things I wasn't aware about the house from listening to that episode, so thank you. There are several podcasts on hauntings and ghosts that I listen to frequently, and I enjoy them all, but your podcast is unique. I'm a history buff, in addition to my interest in the paranormal, and your podcast is the perfect blend of history and hauntings. I also love season 3 in the history of the Midwest axe murders. Once I get caught up on some other things, I'll be checking out your first 2 seasons as well. You probably don't need to do that. But keep up the great work. I look forward to every episode. Sincerely, Tara. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I was excited when I got that email. That was very cool.
Yeah.
Because that was just a fun, you know, extra LA thing that I could do that kind of went with the podcast. And I've always thought that house was interesting. You know, it was always the frozen in time house. And then you find out there's more to that story, you know, once you dig into it. But but it's still a really cool one.
Yeah. So. I don't get as much feedback on like a lot of the Patreon or like bonus episode stuff. So it's cool when people
we know people are hearing them.
Yeah. Acknowledging those things. 2 other things I wanted to shout out real quick. I have one message from Pam Mandel. It's titled The Haunting of 2 Sisters. So we just wrote a book on our true life experiences starting at age 3. Now in our 60s, we wanted to share them with others. Basically said, I would love to send you a copy of the book. Thank you for an opportunity to reach out to your podcast. I received that copy of the book just the other day, and it looks great. And
it looks really
fun. So I'm really excited to check that out. And it's crazy to me that people like, but send us stuff to check out. But it seemed really fun, and I just wanted to give a shout out to that. And then also we had a listener, big fan of the show and has been really, really cool to us for a long time. Her name's Chelsea, and she made us some stickers of our logo, cool. Just the skull, like with the headphones and stuff, and sent me a bunch of those.
Oh, cool.
They look great. Chelsea, thank you so much for sending those. I really appreciate them. And then we had a couple people that signed up for our Patreon, so they get bonus episodes of the show, things like that. So I just wanted to give a shout out and thanks to Lexi and Kirsten. So thank you so much for signing up.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Well, I guess we should probably wrap this up. And we've got one more haunted hotel episode.
One more?
Before the end of the year. Yeah, no, just one more.
Okay.
And then we'll be on our Christmas break for a bit, not too long. We'll still have we still got to get in sometime where we can do our year-end movie.
What are we going to do?
We got to figure it out.
What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Nothing came out. I mean, sort of.
Well, it did. I've got my list actually right now is at like 67 horror films that have come out this year.
I mean, I haven't been trying. Don't get me wrong, I search.
I mean, I've been hunting things down and I've found some really good ones this year that are ones that I think people have not seen.
Yeah.
A couple of them. I've had a few that have been foreign films, but definitely worth the watch.
Uh-huh.
And I watched a really good one just a week or two ago, The Curse of Audrey Earnshaw. I love that movie.
Yeah.
And there's a few more that are still coming. So you just got to really watch for them because a lot of stuff that might have come out in the theater, they've pushed it on over to VOD. Some things they just kept for another year, but some stuff they've been putting out. They have. The Dark and the Wicked, I'll be watching that this weekend. I'm hoping it's as good as it looks.
Yeah, you have a whole list for this weekend, right?
Yeah, I've got a whole list of stuff that just came out. And so I want to make sure that I see this stuff so I can at least review it.
Sure.
My reviews have gotten a little shorter as the time has gone on. If I really like it, then I give it a review. If I don't like it, I just write what was crappy about it and then move on.
Right.
Because I'm already starting to run out of pages in that notebook. So anyway, but yeah, we'll have that coming up. And then a couple more episodes for the rest of the year. And then we'll be back after the first of the year with more Haunted Hollywood. But anyway, for now, guys, thank you so much for listening. Share this with your friends. If you've got friends who like this kind of stuff and then you think they would like this podcast, please share it with them. Give us a review on iTunes. You know, send us a letter, whatever. You know, we'll be happy to hear from you. So
send me more free stuff. This is fun.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I will keep continuing to give shout outs. And if you find somebody you think likes the show, please just remind them that this episode of the American Hauntings podcast was written by Troy Taylor and it was produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. The show airs every other week, offering history, hauntings, folklore, legends, and the truth as we look more into America's darkest corners. Check out the website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com for show notes, more info about the episodes, and links to more from American Hauntings. Because American Hauntings isn't just a podcast, it's books and tours and events and more. And our main website.
Don't forget the sale.
Dinners and
20%
the sale.
Off.
In the main website, you can find all this at AmericanHauntings.net. And if you want even more from us, you can be a supporter of the podcast on Patreon. You can get bonus episodes of the show, t-shirts, discounts, great stuff in the mail, and more. Thanks to our supporters, we've upgraded our equipment for the show, and with continued help from you, we can dedicate more time and resources to creating even more shows in the future. Take a minute and check it out. We think you'll like what you find at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. Be sure to get in touch if you have any comments about the show, suggestions, reviews, jokes, or just want to tell us what you really think of us. We're reachable via email on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Carrier Pigeon, Western Union.
Yeah, Western Union. That was the one we then.
Probably some other things.
Yeah, Pacific Bell.
Yeah. Bell, Until next time.
All right. Goodbye.
So long.
See you later. Yeah, I would say that if that girl was going to come out and do that, she needed to.